needs the One, for he made that ring himself. It is his, and he let a great part of his own former power pass into it, so that he could rule all the others. If he recovers it, then he will command them all again, wherever they be, even the three, and all that has been wrought with them will be laid bare, and he will be stronger than ever. And this is the dreadful chance, Frodo. He believed that the One had perished, that the elves had destroyed it, as should have been done. But he knows now that it has not perished, that it has been found. So he is seeking it, and all his thought is bent on it. It is his great hope and our great fear.
Why wasn't it destroyed? Cried Frodo. And how did the enemy ever come to lose it, if he was so strong and it was so precious to him?
He clutched the ring in his hand, as if he saw already dark fingers stretching out to seize it.
It was taken from him, said Gandalf. The strength of the elves to resist him was greater long ago, and not all men were estranged from them. The men of Westerness came to their aid. That is a chapter of ancient history which it might be good to recall, for there was sorrow then too, and gathering dark, but great valor and great deeds that were not wholly vain. One day, perhaps, I will tell you all the tale, or you shall hear it told in full by one who knows it best. But for the moment, since most of all you need to know how this thing came to you, and that will be tale enough, this is all that I will say. It was Gil-galad, Elven King and Elendil of Westerness, who overthrew Sauron, though they themselves perished in the deed, and Isildur, Elendil's son, cut the ring from Sauron's hand and took it for his own. Then Sauron was vanquished, and his spirit fled and was hidden for long years, until his shadow took shape again in Mirkwood. But the ring was lost. It fell into the great river Anduin, and vanished. For Isildur was marching north along the east banks of the river, and near the Gladden fields he was waylaid by the orcs of the mountains, and almost all his folk were slain. He leapt into the waters, but the ring slipped from his finger as he swam, and then the orcs saw him and killed him with arrows. Gandalf paused. And there in the dark pools amid the Gladden fields, he said, the ring passed out of knowledge and legend. And even so, much of its history is known now only to a few, and the Council of the Wise could discover no more. But at last I can carry on the story, I think. Long after, but still very long ago, there lived by the banks of the great river on the edge of Wilderland a clever-handed and quiet-footed little people. I guess they were of hobbit kind, akin to the fathers of the Stours, for they loved the river and often swam in it, or made little boats of reeds. There were among them a family of high repute, for it was large and wealthier than most, and it was ruled by a grandmother of the folk, stern and wise in old lore, such as they had. The most inquisitive and curious-minded of that family was called Smeagol. He was interested in roots and beginnings. He dived into deep pools, he burrowed under trees and growing plants, he tunneled into green mounds, and he ceased to look up at the hilltops, or the leaves on trees, or the flowers opening in the air. His head and his eyes were downward. He had a friend called Deagle, of similar sort, sharper-eyed, but not so quick and strong. On a time they took a boat and went down to the Gladden fields, where there were great beds of iris and flowering reeds. There Smeagol got out and went nosing about the banks, but Deagle sat in the boat and fished. Suddenly a great fish took his hook, and before he knew where he was dragged out and down into the water, to the bottom. Then he let go of his line, for he thought he saw something shining in the river bed, and holding his breath he grabbed at it. Then up he came spluttering, with weeds in his hair and a handful of mud, and he swam to the bank. And behold, when he washed the mud away, there in his hand lay a beautiful golden ring, and it shone and glittered in the sun, so that his heart was glad.
But Smeagol had been watching him from behind a tree, and as Deagle gloated over the ring, Smeagol came up softly behind.
"Give us that, Deagle, my love," said Smeagol over his friend's shoulder.
"Why?" said Deagle.
"Because it's my birthday, my love, and I want it," said Smeagol.
"I don't care," said Deagle. "I have given you a present already, more than I could afford. I found this, and I'm going to keep it."
"Oh, are you indeed, my love?" said Smeagol, and he caught Deagle by the throat and strangled him, because the gold looked so bright and beautiful. Then he put the ring on his finger.
No one ever found out what had become of Deagle. He was murdered far from home, and his body was cunningly hidden. But Smeagol returned alone, and he found that none of his family could see him when he was wearing the ring. He was very pleased with his discovery, and he concealed it, and he used it to find out secrets, and he put his knowledge to crooked and malicious uses. He became sharp-eyed and keen-eared for all that was hurtful. The ring had given him power according to his stature. It is not to be wondered at that he became very unpopular and was shunned when visible by all his relations. They kicked him, and he bit their feet. He took to thieving, and going about muttering to himself and gurgling in his throat. So they called him Gollum, and cursed him, and told him to go far away. And his grandmother, desiring peace, expelled him from the family and turned him out of her hole. He wandered in loneliness, weeping a little for the hardness of the world, and he journeyed up the river till he came to a stream that flowed down from the mountains, and he went that way. He caught fish in deep pools with invisible fingers and ate them raw. One day it was very hot, and as he was bending over a pool, he felt a burning on the back of his head, and a dazzling light from the water pained his wet eyes. He wondered at it, for he had almost forgotten about the sun. Then for the last time he looked up and shook his fist at her. But as he lowered his eyes, he saw far ahead the tops of the misty mountains out of which the stream came, and he thought suddenly, "It would be cool and shady under those mountains. The sun could not watch me there. The roots of those mountains must be roots indeed. There must be great secrets buried there which have not been discovered since the beginning." So he journeyed by night up into the highlands, and he found a little cave out of which the dark stream ran, and he wormed his way like a maggot into the heart of the hills and vanished out of all knowledge. The ring went into the shadows with him, and even the Maker, when his power had begun to grow again, could learn nothing of it.
"Gollum!" cried Frodo. "Gollum, do you mean that this is the very Gollum creature that Bilbo met? How loathsome!"
"I think it is a sad story," said the wizard, "and it might have happened to others, even to some hobbits that I have known."
"I can't believe that Gollum was connected with hobbits, however distantly," said Frodo with some heat. "What an abominable notion."
"It is true all the same," replied Gandalf. "About their origins, at any rate, I know more than hobbits do themselves. And even Bilbo's story suggests the kinship. There was a great deal in the background of their minds and memories that was very similar. They understood one another remarkably well, very much better than a hobbit would understand, say, a dwarf, or an orc, or even an elf. Think of the riddles they both knew, for one thing."
"Yes," said Frodo, "though other folk beside hobbits ask riddles, and of much the same sort. And hobbits don't cheat. Gollum meant to cheat all the time. He was just trying to put poor Bilbo off his guard. And I dare say it amused his wickedness to start a game which might end in providing him with an easy victim, but if he lost, would not hurt him."
"Only too true, I fear," said Gandalf. "But there was something else in it, I think, which you don't see yet. Even Gollum was not wholly ruined. He had proved tougher than even one of the wise would have guessed, as a hobbit might. There was a little corner of his mind that was still his own, and light came through it, as through a chink in the dark, light out of the past. It was actually pleasant, I think, to hear a kindly voice again, bringing up memories of wind and trees and sun on the grass and such forgotten things. But that, of course, would only make the evil part of him angrier in the end, unless it could be conquered, unless it could be cured. Gandalf sighed. Alas, there is little hope of that for him. Yet not no hope. No. Not though he possessed the ring so long, almost as far back as he can remember, for it was long since he had worn it much. In the black darkness it was seldom needed. Certainly he had never faded. He was thin and tough still. But the thing was eating up his mind, of course, and the torment had become almost unbearable. All the great secrets under the mountains had turned out to be just empty night. There was nothing more to find out. Nothing worth doing, only nasty, furtive eating and resentful remembering. He was altogether wretched. He hated the dark, and he hated light more. He hated everything, and the ring most of all.
"What do you mean?" said Frodo. "Surely the ring was his precious and the only thing he cared for? But if he hated it, why didn't he get rid of it, or go away and leave it?"
"You ought to begin to understand, Frodo, after all you have heard," said Gandalf. "He hated it and loved it, as he hated and loved himself. He couldn't get rid of it. He had no will left in the matter." "A ring of power looks after itself, Frodo. It may slip off treacherously, but its keeper never abandons it. At most he plays with the idea of handing it on to someone else's care, and that only at an early stage, when it first begins to grip. But as far as I know, Bilbo alone in history has ever gone beyond playing and really done it. He needed all my help, too, and even so, he would never have just forsaken it or cast it aside. It was not Gollum, Frodo, but the ring itself that decided things. The ring left him."
"What? Just in time to meet Bilbo?" said Frodo. "Wouldn't an orc have suited it better?"
"It is no laughing matter," said Gandalf. "Not for you. It was the strangest event in the whole history of the ring so far. Bilbo's arrival just at that time, and putting his hand on it blindly in the dark. There was more than one power at work, Frodo. The ring was trying to get back to its master. It had slipped from Isildur's hand and betrayed him. Then, when a chance came, it caught poor Deagle, and he was murdered. And after that, Gollum, and it had devoured him. It could make no further use of him. He was too small and mean, and as long as it stayed with him, he would never leave his deep pool again. So now, when its master was awake once more and sending out his dark thought from Mirkwood, it abandoned Gollum, only to be picked up by the most unlikely person imaginable, Bilbo from the Shire.
Behind that there was something else at work, beyond any design of the ringmaker. I can put it no plainer than by saying that Bilbo was meant to find the ring, and not by its maker. In which case you also were meant to have it, and that may be an encouraging thought."
"It is not," said Frodo, "though I'm not sure that I understand you. But how have you learned all this about the ring and about Gollum? Do you really know it all, or are you just guessing still?"
Gandalf looked at Frodo, and his eyes glinted.
"I knew much, and I have learned much," he answered. "But I'm not going to give an account of all my doings to you. The history of Elendil and Isildur and the One Ring is known to all the wise. Your ring is shown to be that One Ring by the fire writing alone, apart from any other evidence."
"And when did you discover that?" asked Frodo, interrupting.
"Just now in this room, of course," answered the wizard sharply. "But I expected to find it. I have come back from dark journeys and long search to make that final test. It is the last proof, and all is now only too clear. Making out Gollum's part and fitting it into the gap in the history required some thought. I may have started with guesses about Gollum, but I am not guessing now. I know. I have seen him.
You have seen Gollum? Exclaimed Frodo in amazement.
Yes. The obvious thing to do, of course, if one could. I tried long ago, but I have managed it at last.
Then what happened after Bilbo escaped from him? Do you know that?
Not so clearly. What I have told you is what Gollum was willing to tell, though not, of course, in the way I have reported it. Gollum is a liar, and you have to sift his words. For instance, he called the ring his birthday present, and he stuck to that. He said it came from his grandmother, who had lots of beautiful things of that kind. A ridiculous story. I have no doubt that Smeagol's grandmother was a matriarch, a great person in her way, but to talk of her possessing many elven rings was absurd, and as for giving them away, it was a lie, but a lie with a grain of truth. The murder of Deagle haunted Gollum, and he'd made up a defense, repeating it to his precious over and over again as he gnawed bones in the dark until he almost believed it. It was his birthday. Deagle ought to have given the ring to him. It had obviously turned up just so as to be a present. It was his birthday present, and so on and on. I endured him as long as I could, but the truth was desperately important, and in the end I had to be harsh. I put the fear of fire on him and wrung the true story out of him, bit by bit, together with much snivelling and snarling. He thought he was misunderstood and ill-used. But when he had at last told me his history, as far as the end of the riddle game and Bilbo's escape, he would not say any more, except in dark hints. Some other fear was on him greater than mine. He muttered that he was going to get his own back. People would see if he would stand being kicked and driven into a hole and then robbed. Gollum had good friends now, good friends and very strong. They would help him. Baggins would pay for it. That was his chief thought. He hated Bilbo and cursed his name. What is more, he knew where he came from.
And how did he find that out? Asked Frodo.
Well, as for the name, Bilbo very foolishly told Gollum himself. And after that it would not be difficult to discover his country once Gollum came out. Oh yes, he came out. His longing for the ring proved stronger than his fear of the orcs, or even of the light. After a year or two he left the mountains. You see, though still bound by desire of it, the ring was no longer devouring him. He began to revive a little. He felt old, terribly old, yet less timid, and he was mortally hungry. Light of sun and moon, he still feared and hated. And he always will, I think. But he was cunning. He found he could hide from daylight and moonshine and make his way swiftly and softly by dead of night with his pale, cold eyes and catch small, frightened or unwary things. He grew stronger and bolder with new food and new air. He found his way into Mirkwood, as one would expect.
Is that where you found him? Asked Frodo.
I saw him there, answered Gandalf. But before that he had wandered far, following Bilbo's trail. It was difficult to learn anything from him for certain, for his talk was constantly interrupted by curses and threats.
What had it got in its pockets, he said. It wouldn't say, no, precious. Little cheat. Not a fair question. It cheated first, it did. It broke the rules. We ought to have squeezed it. Yes, precious, and we will, precious.
That is a sample of his talk. I don't suppose you want any more. I had weary days of it, but from hints dropped among the snarls, I gathered that his padding feet had taken him at last to Esgaroth, and even to the streets of Dale, listening secretly and peering. Well, the news of the great events went far and wide in Wilderland, and many had heard Bilbo's name and knew where he came from. We'd made no secret of our return journey to his home in the West. Gollum's sharp ears would soon learn what he wanted.
Then why didn't he track Bilbo further? Asked Frodo. Why didn't he come to the Shire?
Ah, said Gandalf, now we come to it. I think Gollum tried to. He set out and came back westward as far as the Great River, but then he turned aside. He was not daunted by the distance, I'm sure.
No, something else drew him away.
So my friends think. Those that hunted